the top stories, Russia orders its troops to advance in Ukraine from all directions, while Kiev says some 3,500 Russian troops have been killed or injured so far in Moscow's attack. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky turns down a U.S. offer to evacuate him from Kiev, saying he needs ammunition, not a ride. And Germany joins the United States in supplying Ukraine with weapons after announcing plans to exclude Russia from the SWIFT interbank system. Welcome to the program. Russia's self-described special military operation in Ukraine is now in its third day. Russian troops resumed their attacks after a brief respite in the anticipation of ceasefire talks.
After the refusal of the Ukrainian side to negotiate, all units were ordered today to develop an offensive in all directions according to the plan of the operation.
Ukraine says it hasn't refused to engage in talks, but says it will not accept any conditions or ultimatums. Reports say the heaviest fighting is underway in and around the city of Kharkiv in the northeast. Russian forces say they have captured the southeastern city of Melitopol. That's while Ukrainian forces in the city of Lviv say Russian soldiers are retreating in the capital, Kiev. Witnesses have reported hearing gunfire near government buildings while a residential tower was struck by a missile. Kiev's mayor has extended a curfew in the city. An oil terminal in a nearby town has come under a missile attack. President Volodymyr Zelensky, however, says the country's military is in control of the capital.
I am here. We will not lay down the weapons. We will defend our state because our weapon is our truth. And the truth is that this is our land, our country, our children, and we will defend all of that.
Zelensky has reportedly turned down a U.S. offer to evacuate him from Kiev, noting that he needs, quote, ammunition and not a ride. Ukraine's health ministry says 198 people, including three children, have been killed since fighting began on Thursday. Kiev also claims more than 1,000 Russian soldiers that have been killed, although Moscow has not released any figures. Russia says it has targeted Ukraine's military infrastructure with air and sea-based cruise missiles, destroying over 800 targets. Moscow has denied reports of targeting cities and says it's taking required measures to avoid civilian casualties. Around 115,000 Ukrainians have already crossed into Poland. The European Union, along with the United States and other Western partners, also plans to impose further sanctions on Russia for its offensive in Ukraine.
Our resolve to continue imposing massive costs on Russia, costs that will further isolate Russia from the international financial system and our economies. In coordination with President Biden, President Macron, Bundeskanzler Scholz, and Prime Minister Draghi, as well as Prime Minister Trudeau and Prime Minister Johnson, we considered a significant tightening of our international response. The European Union and its partners are working to cripple Putin's ability to finance his war machine.
Von der Leyen proposed that EU leaders commit to ensuring that a certain number of Russian banks are removed from the SWIFT interbank system. She said this will ensure that these banks are disconnected from the international financial system. The EU official also proposed to freeze the assets of the Russian central bank. Earlier, Berlin announced it has agreed to limit Moscow's access to SWIFT. Meanwhile, the Ukrainian president has welcomed the move.
Our diplomats fought around the clock and inspirationally for all European countries to agree on a strong and fair decision to disconnect Russia from the international interbanking network. We have also this important victory. This is billions and billions of losses for Russia, a tangible price for this vile invasion of our country.
Zelensky also thanked Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan for Ankara's support, saying it is extremely important to ban the passage of Russian warships to the Black Sea. He also welcomed proposals from Turkey and Azerbaijan to hold peace talks with Russia. Meanwhile, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz says it is his country's duty to support Ukraine in defending itself. Berlin has pledged to transfer 1,000 anti-tank weapons and 500 surface-to-air missiles to Ukraine. This marks a shift from Germany's long-standing policy of banning weapons exports to conflict zones. Political commentator Benjamin Norton says the U.S.-led NATO is not aiming for peace with Russia because it continues to send military equipment and weapons to Ukraine.
That this is a continuation of a policy that goes back many years of NATO and Western powers using Ukraine as a proxy to attack Russia. Let's not forget that this entire conflict we're talking about in Ukraine began in 2014 when the United States orchestrated a coup d'etat, a violent coup in Kiev that overthrew the democratically elected president, Viktor Yanukovych. And in this coup, there were violent far-right extremist elements, including neo-Nazis and white supremacists, that were the muscle behind this coup that were later incorporated into the Ukrainian state. The reality is that since 2014, Ukraine has effectively been a Western puppet regime. It has no sovereignty. And we see now that Western powers are sending weapons to Ukraine because they're using this as a proxy conflict right on Russia's border. And that is why we are seeing Russia's intervention today, because NATO continued to insist right up until last week that Ukraine had the supposed right to join NATO, which is an offensive military alliance. It says it's defensive. It is not defensive. As we've seen in the war in Libya, the war in Afghanistan, the war that destroyed Yugoslavia, NATO is an offensive alliance led by the United States to maintain Western imperial power, and it has made it very clear that its goal is war with Russia.
From the Russian military campaign in Ukraine to the West's escalating confrontation with Moscow, hashtag trending takes a review of the comments on social media.
Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of Hashtag Trending with me, Ali Reza. Tensions have been running high in Eastern Europe over the past days following the Russian attack on Ukraine. Let's check out what is happening there and also some comments on social media reacting to the story. The U.S. and its Western allies have imposed several rounds of sanctions on Russia following the Russian attack on Ukraine. But the Kremlin has pledged to withstand the sanctions and warned of a strong response to the punitive measures. Some social media users believe that what is taking place in Ukraine is a natural response by Moscow and that Russia has every right to defend itself in the face of Western military threats and Kiev's provocation. Now, here's one comment, our first comment of the day, that says, all the pacifists should be thanking Russia. They disarmed Ukraine, prevented war, and are promoting peace. Russia doesn't want to conquer, occupy, annex, or oppress Ukrainians. They just want peace. Here's another comment by Mahbub Nur Osman. So Israel can invade Palestine, USA can invade Syria, Afghanistan, Libya, Iran, and Vietnam, but Putin can't defend himself from NATO. That is trying to invade Russia through Ukraine. And here's another comment by Khan. It says, history won't be written as you write, but true history will be written by those who love their country. Are those who dare to interfere in the internal affairs of other countries innocent? End to American hegemony. I hope Russia paves the way for the new order. Yenegus has our next comment. Russia has every right to defend herself from any NATO expansion. I don't want the war, but Ukraine shouldn't have trusted the U.S. on this one. While blaming the escalation in Ukraine on the West, and in particular the United States, many have taken to social media to express their feeling of grief over the loss of lives in the conflict and wish for peace to return to the region and the fightings to come to an end. Our next comment comes from Adadebayo. It says, if Putin hasn't started this war now, Russia would now be the one invaded by NATO and Ukraine. I feel grief that people are losing their lives, families are separated, war has been fought, but I feel more angry of Ukraine and America's government. I think the feeling of grief is, I can safely say, shared by everyone in this whole situation. Charlie for Change has our next tweet. My heart is with the Ukrainian and Russian people. They don't deserve any of this. My heart is broken and I hope peace come soon. Again, I think that's a sentiment shared by everyone in this whole situation. Days in system, I think, is what how it's written or how it's read. The DC war machine aims to cripple European energy. They all bully Russia. They begged for a fight. USA doesn't care about the people. They only care about the dollars and the euros, I assume they meant. CB has our next tweet. It is statistically highly improbable that this is a coincidence. Russia conducted airstrikes in every area where there were US-run biolabs in Ukraine, the same country where they covertly orchestrated a color revolution and installed a puppet government. There are also tons of comments about the role of NATO in the escalating tensions between Kiev and Moscow. Many people are saying that the Western military alliance's eastward expansion is the root cause of the problem, as the Kremlin sees the move as a direct threat to its security and sovereignty. Here's our final batch of comments. Our next tweet comes from Turajnikha. NATO's expansion to the east is the act of aggression, if not terrorism, not only from Russia's point of view, but also from the eyes of Iran, China, and all independent countries who want to remain independent to live in peace in their own region. Harinder Singh has our next tweet. Why everybody is saying stop Putin? Why not stop NATO? Ukraine is abusing NATO for using them and left alone. Putin's major concern is with NATO. Then why aren't we saying hashtag stop NATO expansion? Mundi has a question for us in a tweet. A question, why the US and NATO won't let Ukraine be neutral? Why the US wants Ukraine to join NATO if joining NATO will bring war anyway? The US should be blamed for this crisis, and now we have the world on the brink of a nuclear war. And over here we have a map that is posted by Richard. It's an interesting one. I'll get to it in a second. NATO has been marked by expansionist aggression. Since 1999, NATO has added 13 new member states, all in Central and Eastern Europe, despite Western assurances at the end of the Cold War that there would be no East expansion of NATO. So this map actually dates all the way back to 1949. But we can see that since then, more and more countries have been added to the NATO alliance in the form of a NATO expansion. Now, this would normally be the time for me to say goodbye, but I actually just received a few more comments that I felt like I still had to share with you, so let's take a look at those. Suraj Shrestha has tweeted, volunteer fighters are now patrolling central Kiev after President Volodymyr Zelensky's call for Ukrainians to defend their country. And the next one by Leon McCain reads, it is a shame that the United States, NATO, and the EU have done nothing for Ukraine. They are simply threatening Russia with economic sanctions that will not work for anything. What happened to the planes, weapons, and your honor? And our last comment comes from Caution Integration. Civilians digging trenches around Kiev and steelworkers building anti-armor hedgehogs in Volyn Oblast to block Russian tanks. And that'll do it for another edition of Hashtag Trending.
Welcome back. The South Korean military says the North has fired an unidentified projectile eastward. The Japanese Coast Guard says the projectile could be a ballistic missile. There was no immediate word from the North, but if confirmed, this would be Pyongyang's eighth missile test this year. North Korea has recently ramped up testing new weapons to modernize its arsenal. Pyongyang insists that such tests are in self-defense in the face of Washington's hostile policies, sanctions, and joint military drills with South Korea. Iran says it has made its red lines clear to the Western participants in the Vienna talks as the eighth round of discussions continues in the Austrian capital. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran has been holding talks with top officials from the European Union. In a tweet, Hossein Amir Abdullahian said Tehran is seriously reviewing the draft of an agreement. He added that Iran is ready to immediately conclude a good deal if the Western parties present in the negotiations show real will. In recent weeks, Iran has said the talks are in their final stages and that it is now up to the other participants to make political decisions. Iranian lawmakers are reviewing the specifics of the budget bill proposed earlier by the government. The parliament says it will not tie the final bill to the result of the ongoing Vienna talks on the revival of the 2015 deal. Youssef Jaloli reports.
Iran's parliament is reviewing the details of the budget bill for the next fiscal year, starting on March 21st. The government's proposed budget stands at roughly $148 billion, some 4% higher than last year's approved budget. Lawmakers have earlier approved the generalities of the budget bill, and it's been a week now since the thorough examination of the bill kicked off in parliament's open sessions.
The government's cap on next year's budget is roughly $148 billion. Out of this figure, $60 billion is allocated for the general budget and $88 billion is earmarked for government spending. Parliament is making some revisions, especially in national development projects and infrastructure. We increased the allocated budget in these areas.
This time, the budget's examination process took longer due to the fact that lawmakers want to be as meticulous as possible while evaluating the income and spending in the country.
While Iran and the P4 Plus One are engaged in tough negotiations in Vienna over the revival of the 2015 deal, President Ebrahim Raisi says the budget bill seeks to promote a resistance economy that would not need to wait for the removal of U.S. sanctions.
Parliament says the budget bill was drawn up based on a no-deal possibility in the Vienna talks and the continuation of U.S. sanctions on Iran.
The proposed budget expects the country's oil sales to reach 1.2 million barrels per day, with $60 a barrel, which would earn Iran some $14 billion in the fiscal year 2022-23. Lawmakers reset this figure to 1.4 million BPDs, with $70 a barrel. Any agreement in the ongoing Vienna talks will immediately push Iran's oil sales up by at least 500,000 BPDs as a result of the removal of U.S. oil embargoes on Iran. But lawmakers say they will not wait for the fate of the negotiations to finalize their budget bill, saying any extra petrodollar will be spent for the good of the people.
We cannot waste our time and wait if the U.S. removes the sanctions or not. So we set the budget based on a daily export of 1.4 million barrels of oil through direct or barter sales and based on assumptions that oil prices will hover around $70 when in fact the prices are reaching $100. Any extra oil income will be saved in a national development fund.
President Ebrahim Raisi submitted the budget bill to Parliament in mid-December last year when Parliament approved its general outlines. Lawmakers now have 3 weeks to go over the details and fix the shortcomings of the budget to pass it into law before handing it to the higher legislative body, the Constitutional Council, for final approval. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Number of new coronavirus infections is on the decline in Iran after the country witnessed the sixth wave of the pandemic. Just a little over 7,000 daily infections have been recorded since Friday. That brings the related caseload to more than 7 million. Number of new fatalities, however, remains relatively high as authorities reported over 220 deaths on Saturday. The latest wave, largely blamed on the Omicron variant, started in mid-January that saw a gradual rise in infections and deaths across the country, but health officials managed to deal with the scenario thanks to a mass vaccination campaign.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Anti-war advocates have recently denounced the corporate media for giving former National Security Advisor John Bolton, a longtime proponent of regime change and U.S. military action around the world, a platform to discuss his views on the current tension in Ukraine. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Julia Conley, journalist. This article is published under the heading, "Critics Want to Know Why Bloodthirsty Warmonger John Bolton Still Invited on TV." Here's the story. Anti-war advocates recently denounced the corporate media for giving former National Security Advisor John Bolton, a longtime proponent of regime change and U.S. military action around the world, a platform to discuss his views on the current tension in Ukraine. MSNBC host Andrea Mitchell invited the former official for the Trump and George W. Bush administrations to discuss how U.S. President Joe Biden should confront Russia. Bolton said that amid news that Russian parliament has authorized the use of military force and Putin issued new demands that Ukraine recognize Russia's claim to Crimea and that the West end weapons shipments there, the Biden administration must swiftly take aggressive action against Russia. John Bolton is a neocon whose foreign policy has been consistently proven wrong. He was wrong about Iraq. He has been wrong about the West Asia region. He was wrong about Afghanistan. Bolton's comments came shortly before Biden announced the White House is joining the European Union in imposing a first round of sanctions against Russian individuals and groups in response to Putin's official recognition of the self-proclaimed People's Republic of Donetsk and Luhansk in eastern Ukraine. Biden announced sanctions against two financial institutions, sovereign debt, and elite individuals in Russia recently, calling them the first tranche of U.S. sanctions and saying the country could take more action if Russian forces advance further into Ukraine. Bolton advised the White House to bring the guillotine down on all the sanctions they have been contemplating and take additional steps in order to avoid further military action by Russia, adding that the U.S. should have placed more troops in Ukraine several months ago. "I think we should have had more American forces in Ukraine, not to fight the Russians, but to train with the Ukrainians and to show those Russian generals looking across the border and seeing American flags," Bolton told Mitchell, adding, "Biden took that off the table, saying there would be no American forces involved, and he got nothing for it." Considering Bolton's record as a war hawk who aggressively pushed the false claim that Iraq harbored weapons of mass destruction to justify the 2003 invasion of the country, urged former President Donald Trump to withdraw from the nuclear Iran deal against the advice of international experts, and urged regime change in Venezuela, critics, including Win Without War, called on media outlets to stop giving John Bolton airtime. "Why is this person on my TV?" asked Andrew Lawrence of Media Matters for America, while podcast host Kylie Kolonsky called Bolton literally the last person on earth who should be giving foreign policy advice right now. Mehdi Hassan, who also hosts a political news show on MSNBC, warned recently that media outlets that interview Bolton amid flaring tensions in Ukraine must at least ask him some tough questions. Hassan tweeted, "We really, really don't need John Bolton's opinions on a new war."
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and congratulations to all on the decisive victory of Islam over the Israelite seditionists at the historic Battle of Khaybar that was won single-handedly by the commander of the faithful Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. And here is what Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, told the Imam while sending him to conquer the impregnable fortress of Khaybar. "Invite them to Islam and inform them of their duty towards Allah and Islam. By Allah, if he guides one single soul through you to the right way, it will be better for you than to own a huge treasure."
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is
For a Better Life.
For a Better Life.
فرمود بعثتُ لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. In this episode, we are going to focus a little bit on the good attributes of human beings, those qualities which Allah has bestowed upon men and through which human beings have been made superior to other creatures. Obviously, we understand that mankind is superior to all other creatures of Allah because of the qualities and the attributes that he has been gifted with. Now, there are many attributes of human beings and many verses about them. Of course, if you want to find some Quranic proofs, some Quranic verses, I will mention some of the verses about those qualities, those important attributes that man has and man enjoys. The human being is the vicegerent of Allah on this planet Earth. That's for sure. The Holy Quran says, إِنِّي جَعَلٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ خَلِيفَةً. And of course, you can go to verse 30 of chapter 2 of chapter Al-Baqarah, where the Quran says, And when your Lord said to the angels, I am going to place on earth a vicegerent, إِنِّي جَعَلٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ خَلِيفَةً. So this means that man is God's vicegerent on earth. Now, this is not the only verse, and of course, there are other verses in the Quran. The Quran says, in chapter 6, verse 135, And he is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, and he might try you by what he has given you. So this is another verse, and I'm just trying to suffice to the translation of the verse for the sake of brevity. Now, of course, in some cases, I will touch on the verse itself as well. Human beings have been actually blessed with the capacity of knowledge. The holy verse of the Quran says, وَعَلَّمَ آدَمَ الْأَسْمَاءَ كُلَّهَا ثُمَّ عَرَضَهُمْ عَلَى الْمَلَائِكَةِ فَقَالَ أَنْبِئُونِي بِأَسْمَاءِ هَؤُلَاءِ إِن كُنْتُمْ صَادِقِينَ. And he taught Adam all the names, then presented them to the angels. Then he said, tell me the names of those if you are right. This is one of the verses of the Quran, which, of course, clearly suggests man's superiority over other creatures, including the angels, including the jinns. And of course, you know that based on this verse, the Quran says, وَعَلَّمَ آدَمَ الْأَسْمَاءَ كُلَّهَا. God taught Adam all the names, all the attributes, you know. And then, of course, the same names were presented to the angels, and the angels were unable to mention them or to say anything because the angels did not have the capacity to learn and did not have the ability to memorize the names. Of course, when it comes to what the names are, this has to be studied in the context of the ayat, and also, and of course, we have to refer to the exegesis or the commentary of the Holy Quran to understand what those names are. That is a secret, probably. Names in this verse, according to some scholars and according to some exegetes, means realities. Not only names of people or things or items, you know. That's for sure, because it's very easy to learn names. But when it comes to the secrets or realities of things, that's an uphill task, you know. That's not something easy to learn. And that's why the angels, the Malaika, were unable to learn those names. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Dear brothers and sisters, when angels thought that they were superior to Adam, Allah the Most Glorious wanted to prove that the angels were wrong. The Almighty God taught Adam all the facts and then asked the angels if they were true in their claim of being superior to man. Then they would have to divulge those facts and secrets to Allah. You know, if they were true in their claim that they were actually superior, they should have disclosed, they should disclose or they should divulge those facts and secrets to Allah. But, you know, according to the Quran, they were not able to do so. And so we can understand from this verse that man is capable of attaining all knowledge. Man has the capacity to improve and to make progress and to ascend and to elevate, you know, to move up to the heavens and to get as close to Allah through attaining knowledge, through attaining perfection, and through learning the, you know, attributes. Human beings are created in such a way that they can know their creator through, you know, innate knowledge. Man has no need to use external ways for knowing Allah. If you go deep into our spirits, we can understand that we are created, that we have a Lord, and that we have been created for a purpose. If provided that the instinct, that the fitrah that God has bestowed or that God has placed in us is not overwhelmed by anything else. I give you an example which has been reported from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. A man actually went to Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam and asked him to prove the existence of Allah, the Most Glorious. The Imam asked him whether he had traveled on a ship or not. The man answered in the affirmative. He said, yes, I have traveled. Then the Imam asked him whether in his travel, in his journey, or in his voyage, a situation arose where there existed a danger for the ship to sink and that people began to panic and were afraid that the ship would be wrecked and they would die as a result. The man again gave an affirmative answer. He said, yes, of course. The Imam then asked, did you think of any power that could have saved you then? The man said, yes. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam concluded, that's Allah, the Omnipotent. You thought of Allah, that's Allah, the Omnipotent. And of course, in miseries and in the state of absolute helplessness, we remember the absolute being who is Allah. Experienced, every one of us has experienced this situation, this particular situation, when we are in absolute misery, we remember Allah, we remember that supreme being, and we pray to Him to help us. And that means that God has given us the fitrah, that feeling, you know, that when we are in danger, we feel no one can help us other than Allah. And that is the inborn knowledge. In fact, the inborn knowledge is awakened, it is activated. And of course, in many, you know, people and in ordinary situations, this knowledge of Allah, you know, is dormant. Normally, you know, we don't care about it. It is dormant, it's not very much active. But it can be awakened and strengthened, especially when we lose our, for example, shelter and when we lose our strength and feel quite helpless. There are brothers and sisters, there are more to say in this regard, but I will suffice to this much. And of course, there are verses. Inshallah, we will cover this topic in the following episode. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, in all. shade of palm, every closed hand in us, every sparkling tear on every eyelash in us, every thought I have and every word I share in us.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Hello everyone and welcome to The Light. Color, beauty and entertainment. The French city of Nice hosts a dazzling and flashy event. The so-called Battle of the Flowers took place on Saturday. Performers on top of animal-themed floats waved at the crowd and threw flowers at the audience while musicians played live. Each of the 16 floats was decorated with around 3,000 flowers. Also, thousands of people attended the event. The Battle of the Flowers is part of the carnival in Nice, which has been held annually for almost 150 years. An endangered Mediterranean monk seal has embarked on a new solo adventure after spending months under the care of conservationists. Four-month-old Evie was released back into the wild on February 15th in northern Greece. Evie was rescued when she was only 7 days old. She had been washed ashore and separated from her nursing mother during a storm. However, conservationists found the lucky seal and started taking care of her. Even though Evie's health was poor, she recuperated quickly.
She was really dehydrated in the beginning, which is very common with pups that separate from their mothers at such an early age. And the first few weeks were critical for her health because there's basically no way to replenish, like to replace the mother's milk. So we have a certain protocol and a food regimen that we provide along with vitamins and other supplements to the seal. And thankfully, in the first few weeks, she showed signs of her health status became better.
The conservationists hope Evie will be able to join a community of her species soon. They will be tracking her movements with a chip. There are only a few hundred Mediterranean monk seals left in the wild. About half of them live in Greece. Entrapment from fishing, pollution, depletion of food resources, and climate change are some of the threats facing the species.
History shows a gun barrel never stops people from acquiring their learning tools. A bookshop in the besieged Gaza Strip is a testimony as book lovers flooded the store months after it was flattened in an Israeli airstrike. The new Samir Mansour bookshop, funded by an international donor campaign, now stands some 200 meters from its original site. It was destroyed by an Israeli airstrike on the west of Gaza City last year. The new shop is spread across two floors and is stocked with some 400,000 books. They range from school texts to the Quran to Arabic translations of European literary classics. Hundreds of people, including writers and Palestinian officials, attended the bookshop's reopening. The store first opened its doors 30 years ago and is considered the oldest and the biggest in Gaza.
The city of London usually welcomes arts and culture from all over the world, including Iran. In our next report, Bianca Rahimi will be taking us to a performance that fuses music from across the East.
A dream has become a reality. The Conference of the Birds, composed by the brilliant young musician Mehsan Marvasti, and inspired by a poem of the same name written by poet Attar of Nishapur in the 12th century, performed here in London. It's a story all Iranians are familiar with, about an epic journey to find the Simurgh.
The Simurgh is to the east what the phoenix is to the west, a mythical creature that symbolizes transformation. And the story of the Simurgh is a spiritual one, full of courage, determination, and self-discovery.
Well, I think it's the first time I've seen so prominently advertised a non-Western musical traditional concert. And I've got a long-standing interest in music from the different parts of the Islamic world. It kind of evokes sort of deeper feelings, spiritual feelings. And the fact that this specific concert is about kind of a spiritual poem, it taps into something which I think a lot of us are looking for, especially in this post-pandemic, current pandemic situation. We're looking for some deeper meanings. So I think it will be striking a chord for a lot of people.
It's a mix of fusion of different music, and that's always interesting, and it's Eurasian music, and it uses different instruments from across Asia to represent birds, and it just sounded lovely.
Even though there are differences, cultural differences between these places and these peoples, and those differences should be recognised in general, that through things like music and art, there can also be synergy, and like, yeah, things can work together as well.
5 years in the making, the Conference of the Birds, conducted by Farnoush Behzad, brought together musicians and instruments from across the world. It fuses Azeri, Chinese, Indian, Arabic, Afghan, Armenian and Persian music, brought to the audience by a Western orchestra. The performance was accompanied by two elocutionists who narrated the story and animated clips of birds and their migratory lives. The art and culture of Iran needs no introduction, renowned worldwide. But young Iranian artists living far from home are always looking for ways to capture the spirit of their homeland and offer Western audiences a taste of Iran. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Axolotls are unique Mexican amphibians at risk of extinction, and many conservation programs are now trying to save these strange-looking animals. An ecological park in Mexico City is the latest place to celebrate them. It has held a ceremony for releasing baby axolotls into their natural habitat, which is the mud. These amphibians are so special that even a number of city officials attended the event. Conservationists say having a clean environment is key to their survival.
I've managed to breed up to 22,000 axolotls. In all of Xochimilco, there are 90 axolotls across 90 kilometers, but the quality of the axolotls depends on the quality of biologist you are. Bad quality water has killed anywhere from 12,000 to 15,000.
Researchers have discovered that axolotls can absorb oxygen from the surface of their skin and are therefore more vulnerable to dirty water and environments. More than 70 breeding centers across Mexico have joined the rally of saving these critically endangered species. Many are even marketing them as ideal pets, but to animal advocates, keeping axolotls as pets is a definite no-no.
Now for those who are interested in archaeology, the remains of 14 mummies have been unearthed at an ancient site in central Peru. The mummies, believed to be over 1,000 years old, include 6 children and 8 adults. The tomb containing the bodies was found at an archaeological complex about 25 kilometers from the capital, Lima. Researchers discovered other objects such as clay pots, decorated calabashes, and some knitting gears near the mummies. They believe the children and adults were sacrificed in honor of a prominent local figure whose mummified body was found last November in the same area. Van Dalen says the discovery provides them with the oldest evidence of child sacrifice associated with the burial of an elite character in the pre-Inca era. The city of Cajamarquia, which was built out of mud in around 200 BC, is considered as one of the largest archaeological complexes in Peru.
A miniature bull in Germany's Bavaria is proving that size does not matter, as the small bovine makes himself comfortable in his new herd at an animal sanctuary. This tiny bull had a lucky escape and was rescued from a farmer who was taking him to a slaughterhouse. The mini cow is named Napoleon and was born with a genetic defect. Just 8 months old, the diminutive bull has already reached his full size. Napoleon might be small, but he is mighty and daring, as he is not afraid of joining a herd consisting of big and huge animals.
Napoleon belongs to the Dexter breed, which produces rather small cattle anyway. They grow up to be about 1.2 meters. With his 80 centimeters, he's of course far below that. Despite his size, he feels like a complete bull and is in a good mood. He has settled in with us very quickly, which we are very happy about. He also has a lively effect on the herd.
The little bovine now lives with 100 other rescued livestock. His rescuers say he gets along with other animals and has already become friendly with another rescued cow. The Dexter is a breed of cattle first originated in Ireland. They are usually bred for high-quality meat and milk. An Indonesian man frees a crocodile of a tire that was stuck around its neck some 6 years ago. Tilly, a self-taught rescuer and resident of Central Sulawesi province, captured the reptile and cut the tie using a small saw with the help of some locals. The animal had been too smart to be trapped. Tilly says he had been tracking the reptile for weeks using a basic trap with a rope tied to a log. He used live chickens and dogs as bait to lure the reptile. The crocodile drew the sympathy of local residents who worried the tire would choke as it grows in size. Tilly says his main motive was to help animals, claiming it was not his first experience dealing with a crocodile.
Biologists in Peru release two birds back to their natural habitat after weeks of efforts to attend and conserve dozens of animals affected by an oil spill. Two birds were among some 200 animals found dehydrated and were brought to a veterinary hospital for treatment. Veterinarians, biologists, and volunteers have been leading the cleanup operation of the affected coast close to the capital, Lima. So far, several species have been released after rehabilitation. An oil tanker off the coast of Peru was hit by waves triggered by a volcanic eruption miles away in Tunga in January. Some 6,000 barrels of oil spilled into the ocean that polluted waters and beaches along Peru's Pacific coast.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Central Intelligence Agency has secretly been running mass surveillance operations to collect data on Americans, according to a newly published letter written by Senators Ron Wyden and Martin Heinrich. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by John Miltimore Ryder.
This article is published under the heading, Sick Things We Know About the CIA's Secret Mass Surveillance Program. Here's the story. The Central Intelligence Agency has secretly been running mass surveillance operations to collect data on Americans, according to a newly published letter written by Senators Ron Wyden and Martin Heinrich. Wyden and Heinrich, both members of the Senate Intelligence Committee, wrote the letter in April 2021, and the letter was partly declassified recently. In the letter, Wyden and Heinrich called on the CIA to inform the public about the data collection program, calling for full transparency. This declassification is urgent, the senators wrote. The CIA responded to the allegations in a statement published by the Wall Street Journal. CIA recognizes and takes very seriously our obligation to respect the privacy and civil liberties of U.S. persons in the conduct of our vital national security mission and conducts our activities, including collection activities, in compliance with U.S. law, Executive Order 12,333, and our Attorney General guidelines, said Christy Scott, the agency's privacy and civil liberties officer, adding, CIA is committed to transparency consistent with obligation to protect intelligence sources and methods. The allegations from Wyden and Heinrich are serious, but the extent of the danger and severity is clouded by several factors, not the least of which is the fact that the letter is highly redacted. Here are a few important takeaways. Number one, laws prohibit CIA spying on Americans. As Politico noted, the CIA is largely prohibited by law from engaging in domestic spying, which makes the revelations troubling. But as the Wall Street Journal reports that times intelligence agencies have found ways to